Do you eat, sleep, and breathe golf? Do you love to explore? And most importantly, do you just want to have some fun? Well, then welcome to Talking Golf Getaways with Mitch and Darren. Now here's the guy with all the questions, Mitch Lawrence, and the guy with all the answers, Darren Bunch.
Welcome once again to Talking Golf Getaways and our podcast that's available on iTunes, Audioboom, and the all-new GolfTripX.com. Thanks for joining us. I'm Mitch Lawrence in the seaside golf capital of the world in Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. He is Darren Bunch out in sunny California. And on this episode, number 129, if I'm not mistaken, and I'm not, we'll be diving right into it with a man we've wanted to have on the podcast for a very, very long time. N'est-ce pas, Darren?
That is correct. We've both been avid readers of Tom Coyne's books on Ireland and Scotland, plus other great pieces he's written for publications like the Golfer's Journal. But today we're going to be talking about his newest literary quest, A Course Called Home, and kind of how he goes about planning these ultimate golf trip itineraries that are going to make up just what I believe is a mammoth undertaking of exploring golf courses across the United States.
And even calling it a mammoth undertaking is an understatement. So I can't wait to get into it with Tom.
I don't know if I've mentioned this to you, Mitch, but the United States is a much bigger place than Ireland or Scotland. So we'll have to get into that with him.
I wonder if Tom knows that. Do you think? Well, luckily, he'll be talking to us, so we'll find out. Before we get to that and get to Tom, just a few words about our all-new Golf Trip Experts website at golftripx.com. Not only is it the new home of our very own Talking Golf Getaways podcast, which we're obviously excited about, but there's also all manner of other golf travel content. We're updating it daily with new stories, special projects, photo galleries, you name it. So if you head over to golftripx.com, you can poke around. Let us know what you think. We're going to work to build Golf Trip Experts brand into a true resource for the traveling golfer. You know that's what we're all about. Don't forget to follow the new at Golf Trip Experts account on Twitter for the latest website updates. Upcoming trips, Sweden's Cove. Anyone?
Ooh.
And much, much more. So a lot of great info coming your way. Let us get to our guest today. Darren mentioned Tom Coyne, a man who indeed wears many hats, an associate professor in English at St. Joseph's University on the edge of Philadelphia. Go Hawks. He's not only dropped pearls of wisdom about writing, literature, and creativity on his students, but for almost two decades has taught us all much about the game we love through a variety of formats. Yes, he has been a TV host talking about Ireland, a co-producer and a screenwriter in Hollywood. Darren, I know you love this. A Gentleman's Game with an actor that we love, Gary Sinise. That was taken from Tom's book. But it is through the written word that Tom's become one of our most read authors and indeed, at least from me, a kind of a spiritual guide. I know he's not going to want to hear that, but it's the truth. Numerous articles over the years in all of the best publications, including most recently, as Darren said, in the Golfer's Journal, some truly great writing there. And in addition to the book Paper Tiger, which if you haven't read, you have to, came out in 2006. It was about his journey to try to play tour-level golf. But the two books that really catapulted Tom onto the New York Times bestseller list and into the hearts of golfers worldwide, A Course Called Ireland in 2009 and A Course Called Scotland released last year, truly magnificent works. We'll touch on them because we want to focus on A Course Called Home today. But obviously, if you've been in a cave in Guam and have not read Ireland and Scotland, you need to do that now. You can find out more about Tom and his plans at Coynewriter, C-O-Y-N-E, Coynewriter on Twitter and Instagram, certainly on his website, tomcoyne.com. And I have decided your theme song, Tom, should be from the Eagles as you are getting ready to take it to the limit one more time. It's a thrill to have you on with us. Welcome to Talking Golf Getaways.
Mitch, thank you so much for that. And Darren, thanks for having me, guys. And that introduction, wow. Can you send me a copy of that? Because that was really, That was awesome. And you captured it all. What can I add?
Yeah, you could add a lot. No, trust me.
That was great. Thank
that
you
was
so much.
So scratching the surface that it's not even, I told Darren before we started, I said, I have in researching you a little bit more than I had before. I came across some really great stuff. We're not going to have time to get into it now. Hopefully we'll get you back on at some point and dive into the vaults of Tom Coindom. But
it's a scary place, man. You don't might not want to go there.
I think I do. Darren, obviously, we're glad to have Tom on today.
Oh, man. And Tom, you know, I got the idea to invite you on the podcast long before the announcement of the new book. I was driving around Scotland by my lonesome back in September, as you know, and I was listening to A Course Called Scotland as my lone companion on that trip. And it dawned on me how absolutely insane it has to be for you to piece together these itineraries to publish books like this. Scotland, the Ireland book, and now this A Course Called Home. You know, knowing what I know about building week-long trips, I think your task would make my head explode. Just first up on top here, how do you do it?
It is making my head explode, to be honest, right now. I mean, it becomes a sort of a full-time job. You know, it's the book before the book. You know, the book takes, you know, however many months, 6-8 months to write. But in planning the trips, you know, Ireland took about a year of planning. Scotland took about a year of planning. It's a big venture. I kind of start out with, you know, the list of places I want to go. First I tell people what I'm doing and solicit all their advice. You know, you have to go here, you have to go there. And each trip evolved differently. You know, Ireland, I knew, okay, I'm going to play every links. So that gave me like, you know, 40 to 50 courses. Scotland originally started as it was originally called A Course Called the Kingdom. And I was going to play all the rota courses. But I started to get advice, hey, if you're going here, you have to go there. Then if you're there, you have to go there. And there's so many courses so packed, you know, close to one another that that itinerary just exploded on me. And I had over 100 courses pretty quickly. And that's kind of what's happening with the course called, you know, the new book. And funny enough, there's already been a change to that book. As I mentioned, A Course Called the Kingdom turned into A Course Called Scotland. And so my publisher just made their announcement about the book. And now the book is called, and this is the first place it's being shared, A Course Called America. So they want to keep it more in line with, you know, Ireland, Scotland, America. I like A Course Called Home, but I'm not going to argue with my understanding the thinking behind A Course Called America, and they know what they're doing. In doing America, the list is, I solicited a lot of advice. I got way more input than I expected. Probably 500 emails.
A lot of that was just from me.
Half of them were from you. And
and you haven't gotten mine yet.
Exactly. And between the tweets and Facebook and everything, which is just awesome. I mean, it's, I really feel like it will be a trip with no stone unturned. So right now I have a list of about 300 places. And in that 300, I'm going to visit every course to ever host a US Open. So that's sort of the initial challenge that I'm trying to sort of conquer, is to get on all of those courses and then let them sort of be tent poles for the trip and then let it grow outward from there. So on one screen, I have a map of the country with all the courses pinned. On the other screen, I have a spreadsheet with all the courses, where they are, and my contacts there, and the dates I'm looking to play them. I recently broke up the country into like 10 different segments, because I'm going to do this in 10 legs, so that I can come back for, you know, because this is going to take from May through December. So there are things like, you know, birthdays and first communions and things like that I'm not going to miss. So
where are your priorities, man? Come on.
Right. I know. What am I? Seriously, I'm a wimp. So in each leg, you know, is about 6 weeks. And I've sort of put each leg into different chunks of the country. So I'm just starting to kind of whittle it down, you know, and starting to get a sense for dates. The first leg is I start the trip at Newport, because they hosted the first U.S. Open and the first U.S. Am. So I thought that's a good place to start. And then I'll work my way back towards Philadelphia and do New York and Long Island on that first chunk. But there's, gosh, there's so much golf on Long Island, and it's not the easiest golf to get on. So right. That's taking a lot of time.
You called yourself in reading, and I believe it was in Scotland, in a course called Scotland, but you called yourself an obsessive planner.
Yeah.
And you said that, and Darren and I have talked about this on the show before, when we plan a trip, say to someplace like Bandon, which is remote, and the planning of it makes it better. And then the actual journeying to get there, depending on where you're coming from, makes it better while you're getting there. It adds to the excitement. When you have a trip like this, and you mentioned 300 plus courses, and I have a feeling there's going to be more added to that to then whittle it down, I can't even imagine the mixture of excitement and kind of overwhelming planning nature of this whole thing that you've been doing for a while and will now do until you actually take off at Newport. Is that something tangible to you? Do you really get into the feeling of what you are about to do the way we do when we plan a small trip?
Kind of, yeah. It's honest. It's a little scary. I mean, I write about, you know, in the books how planning a golf trip is sometimes almost as fun as the trip, because you get to live it for, you're planning for 6 months. So that's like 6 months of dreaming about it and thinking about it and looking at every detail and researching and et cetera. So there's so much joy in doing that. And so I love that planning aspect of it. This sort of planning, and I enjoy that with Scotland and Ireland, but this kind of planning, it feels a little bit out of control. Yeah. I'm trying to find ways to wrap my head around how it's going to happen, how each segment's going to work, how there's going to be enough time, and day by day, it's sort of taking a focus where it does look manageable. It looks like something I can at least wrap my head around doing. And once I get to that point, then I'll enjoy it more, because then I'll say, all right, I know on this date I'm here, on this date I'm here, where am I going to stay? And those are the fun bits, I think, are those sort of small details of like, I'm here in the morning, I'm here in the afternoon, I'm meeting this guy then. But right now, it's going through emails and contacts and trying to keep everything straight. And that's really challenging. So as I sit here and 8 hours a day work on this, well, I have to go teach sometimes now too, because school just started again.
But they've got some nerve.
I know, really. The teaching schedule is pretty good, so I'm still spending a ton of time on this. And in those hours, it does go back and forth between, all right, you know, I've locked down this course, or I've just heard back from them, and that's great. And then I look at the list and think, you know, I have to do this for, you know, 250 more days. And it does, this one feels a little more overwhelming. So, but you know, as I've learned with the past ones, it's just time, you know, you keep working on it, you keep banging away at the itinerary, and things fall into place. And then there are things that never will fall into place, and you just accept it. You know, it is a good exercise, I think, in sort of personal restraint and trying to force things that can't be forced. I find that part of being an obsessive planner is I want everything to happen now. I want everything to be set up. I want it all to be clear and done and taken care of. And then there are times when you find out, you know, all right, this one's not going to happen, or this day's not going to work. But the book will be fine. And so you have to practice a little bit of acceptance along the way.
Well, with the new book, and you mentioned the U.S. Open venues in a course called America, we'll start calling it that. You know, you're mixing that with resorts, municipals, community golf courses. When this whole idea came about, what exactly did you think you would be searching for? You know, what's the thread through all of these, besides the fact that it's just golf and that ties us all together anyway? You know, what's the quest here? Other than just playing all the courses, what is it you're really looking for in the soul of the game as you kind of make your way through America? What do you anticipate you'll find?
Yeah, that's a great question because, you know, this book, this idea started, and kind of they all, I guess, start here, is that the golf is secondary. You know, and going to Ireland, it was my interest and passion for my, you know, Irish heritage and loving that country and wanting to get to know every corner of it. Going to Scotland, that was about, you know, a place I knew nothing about, and that had something I thought soulful about the game, you know, to offer. But really, in wanting to do a book about America, there are plenty of golf reasons. The fact that I know a lot more about golf in Ireland and Scotland than I do in my own country was primary among them. You know, people ask me my favorite courses, and I'll tell you 10 courses in Ireland, 10 courses in Scotland. And in America, it's kind of like, well, I know Philly pretty well. So, you know, there was plenty of reason to kind of discover more about the great golf in our country that I'm probably too quick to discount because I love Lynx golf over there so much. But the real question, I think, at the heart of the whole thing is I want to figure out my country, you know, and that's my home. And that's the initial title being A Course Called Home. You know, it's definitely an interesting time in America. And I don't think the dialogue amongst our one another is very good. And I don't understand everything that's going on in our country. So I want to go figure it out. Like, I want to go meet people in places that I kind of too readily dismiss or discount. I generally want to get to know other Americans everywhere, and understand their lives and what they're about, who they are, what they do, why they do the things they do, all those kinds of questions. And I guess so. All the stories have been very character driven. This one I think will be very even more so because it's about, you know, I'm going to all 50 states and I want to get a portrait of America in 2019. And golf is the beautiful, wonderful way to do that because that's sort of the reason behind playing the municipal courses, the community golf courses. You know, with every U.S. Open course I'm going to play the local, like, pumpkin patch too. You know, because I don't want this just to be a book about country clubs. I don't want this just to be a book about country club members. Not that they're not interesting or have great stories, but that's a certain type of golfer, and I don't want the whole book to be that. About that kind of golfer. There's so many more other kinds of golfers out there. And so that's why I want to go everywhere, play all sorts of different courses, and really kind of, you know, it's a weird, you know, like I said, it's a weird time. And I watch the news and I feel badly sometimes, a lot of times. And I want to kind of remind myself what's so great about America. And I think the best way for me to do that is to go out and experience more of it. And so that's kind of where I'm coming from with it.
You said, and in my reading about this too, and I know Darren's seen this also, just on the golf side, I thought it was interesting because the phrase you used was the search for the great American golf course, which is a really interesting, obviously an interesting phrase and an interesting concept. Do you, given the kind of human you are, you're creative, you're open of heart, everything that you've done up to this point is about having your heart be opened in a certain way to me. You're curious. Do you have any preconceived ideas of what that actually means? The great American golf course that you're going to be searching for?
It's a big label, right? It's a big question. It's a big task, you know. I think first, what's going to be fun is trying to figure out what that even means. You know, as I'm going around, like, what does American mean in 2019? You know, so that's the first part I have to figure out on my travels. And then what makes it great? You know, what makes a golf course great? Is it the people? Is it the design? Is it the experience? Is it how you play it? All those other things. You know, what goes into making a course great? I don't know what I'll find. That's why I'm going, and that's the fun of doing it, obviously. But, you know, my initial idea of sort of saying the great American golf course is I suspect that kind of golf course is a place where anyone can play it, right? That it's a course where you have all sorts of different people, that it's a course that celebrates the, you know, that's joyful. That it's a course that is for everybody. And that's what I, going into it, that would be my preconception about what the Great American Golf Course would be. And so that would, you know, so maybe it's not Augusta or Pine Valley, or maybe it is, I don't know yet. But, I, you know, that label to me, it's a big one and it's a big challenge. And I need it to be a big challenge because, you know, these books, you have to be setting out for something. You have to be setting out to do something extraordinary and to find something unusual. You know, in Scotland, I'm heading out to find the secret to golf, right? I mean, what a big quest and almost fool's errand that is. But you can't write a book about like, well, I went to Scotland and played a lot of golf, right? I can't write a book about like, man, I really enjoyed America. That was fun. You know, there needs to be a quest. I need to be after something and it needs to be almost something unreasonable. That to me justifies all the effort and the time and the cost that goes into doing something like this. You know, you got to shoot for something big. And I think that's a big thing to shoot for.
Well, it definitely is. And you've mentioned that you know, you reached out, you put this out on social media, you had all kinds of response. You know, the average golfer who's planning a big trip, finances become kind of key in determining it. How in the world do you finance this entire thing? I know that you've reached out to ask people to help you in getting on courses and finding places to stay and you name it, but how does that aspect of it even work?
Powerball, man. It's it's all about Powerball and scratch offs. That's kind of my plan. You know, that's like, and that's always a big question with these trips is, you know, how'd you pay for it? I'm hoping that I get some help. Right. With Scotland and Ireland, I got a lot of help on tee times and greens fees, and I'll be, you know, transparent about that. I often didn't have to pay for golf. Thank God. And if people find that in some way disingenuous or like phony, it's like, I'm, you know, sorry, but if I had to pay for all the golf, I couldn't do the stories. It's cost prohibitive. Places are generally, you know, hey, if you're coming to their course and you write about golf or you're going to post something about their golf course, they're generally pretty cool about you, about letting you play there. So hopefully I can take the cost of the actual golf out of the equation, not everywhere, but most places that, so I'll be able to, that'll help the budget. The travel on this one has a lot more, you know, it's got a lot of flying and a ton of driving and a lot of hotel rooms and places to stay. So this one's probably going to be the most expensive. You know, thankfully I get in advance, you know, for when I decide to do, you know, sell the book to the publisher, and you know, that generally will cover those expenses. I try not to spend all the advance, you know, like, so there's something left over, you know, so that we're not just, especially, you know, my wife doesn't appreciate me doing these things just for fun. There has to be something else. And so hopefully, you know, I can do it on a shoestring of a budget as possible. We're going to, you know, I'll look to, I get help too with like golf balls from Titleist, equipment from, you know, different companies. You know, I'll probably ask some hotel chains and some airlines if they'd be interested in sort of being a part of the adventure too, you know, because I'll be doing a ton of social media and video stuff on the road. So if any companies out there listening want to be a part of A Course Called America, you know, I'm looking for, you know, folks who'd like to sponsor or have me as an ambassador or be part of a team to kind of help with that. Yeah. You got to be kind of creative to not go broke doing something like this, but I think we'll be all right. It's going to be, I know we're going to be all right. Yeah. It's going to be good.
It's funny. I was thinking logistically, you won't have at least one key element that the other books had in that, you won't have to worry about driving stick shift rental cars from on the wrong side of the road with the stick shift in the wrong place, at least here in America.
Exactly. It's going to be, it's going to be funny. Like, cause I'll be on another one of these adventures, but I'll still be kind of home too, you know,
right.
That I'm a short plane ride from any, you know, that I'm not making international phone calls home, that I'm going to have Wi-Fi wherever I go, you know? So there'll be definitely some luxuries of sticking to America that I'm not accustomed to, you know, restaurants I recognize, menus I'm familiar with, That's all going to be interesting. Though I certainly want to, in these adventures, you know, get as much local flavor everywhere I go, for sure. Like with the other books, I think it, I hope that it works as something of a travelogue and a travel guide for people, you know, to go out and explore more golf in America. And even especially for people coming from other countries, I hope it's useful to them, because their idea, I find, you know, with my Irish and Scottish friends, they love to come over here and play. Well, they love to come play in Florida in, you know, in the winter, obviously, like everybody does. But they want to come over and play all the courses they see on TV. And unfortunately, all those courses they see on TV in the Ryder Cup or in the U.S. Open or whatever, you know, they can't just show up and book a tee time. So I want to find a lot of great places where they can, places that are maybe a little more off the map, and try and build, you know, some itineraries for accessible golf that'll, you know, blow you away. And I know it's out there. I haven't done the research yet.
Well, you're in the middle of that. It was a friend, if I'm not mistaken, it was actually a friend of yours in Ireland who kind of set this wheel in motion for a course called America, when he was trying to talk to you about which courses he could play.
Exactly. You know, the idea was, you know, well, I want to play Baldwinsville. I want to play Wingfoot, you know, Marion and Pine Valley. I have to play those, you know, like listing, because these are kind of just going by the top 100 list, you know?
Right.
And who do you know there? Can you set me up? You know, first there was like, he understood that he needs some help there, but he didn't understand like to what extent, that kind of help requires. And he was also kind of funny about like trying to play Marion and Oakmont like on the same day, because they're both in Pennsylvania. Mm-hmm. And just sort of educating him a little bit in the map, it's like, man, I can fly to Ireland in the same time I can drive to Oakmont. So, you know, it's a little bigger for sure. So,
yeah.
And that's definitely one of the intimidating things about this project. America is, it's a lot bigger than those other two countries.
Yeah.
So, and man, every state, I'm just hearing from so many people. I swear Minnesota must have 10,000 golf courses, or the place, or the people are just that nice. Cause I, like half the email I'm getting is from Minnesota about, you got to play here, you got to play here. So
most of that is probably from our friend Eric Hart, who you know as well. You've traveled with. You were with him in, I believe, in Ireland, right? And he knows more about Minnesota golf than I think anybody on the planet. So I knew he was crafting an email as soon as you announced this.
Yeah, he sent me some good some do not miss recommendations, and I would never disappoint him. I'll definitely go to his spots for sure.
Can I follow up kind of along those lines, Darren? We mentioned about social media and you're putting it out there. I know in Ireland and Scotland, you had people join you along the way that actively planned their trip around coin travels.
Yeah.
Somehow. And are you planning on having that happen on this trip too? I know Darren is out on the West Coast. I'm here in Myrtle Beach. I know both of us will hopefully be able to meet you somewhere on this journey and share a round or two.
Absolutely.
Are you prepared for people just kind of showing up?
I'm hoping.
You know, finding out about you and showing up?
I really hope so, because that was really my favorite part of doing the Scotland book, was when I kind of threw out, you know, on the radio one day, open invitation, anyone want to come to Scotland? And if you find me, I'd love to join me for golf. And like a dozen people did, which I was shocked by. But they added so much to the book and they became such good friends. I mean, they're friends that I'm almost texting with like on a daily basis still. We became our own sort of weird golf gang. And they're people I never would have met if it wasn't for golf. It's a group of people. We have like no business associating with one another otherwise. Yet we're like bound, because I think golf does that, but really golf and travel do that together. You know, when you travel with somebody, you see their best and their worst. And I think it bonds you in really, powerful ways. But I would love that to happen in a course called American. In fact, everyone that's inviting me to their golf course or suggesting a golf course, you know, I'm telling them like, hey, that's great. I'll add it to the list and join me, you know? And I hope people do, because again, I need characters for the stories. The golf courses are to some extent will be the characters in the story, but these books are all about people They're all about relationships. They're all about, you know, writing is, for me, stories are about this question of like why people do the things that they do. That's why we read books, because people make choices, people do things, people make mistakes, people have triumphs, all that stuff. I need people to come out and do that stuff with me. So, and it gets me out of myself too. It helps the book from being too self-indulgent or too much of just like up in my head when I have folks come join me. So yeah, anyone listening, love for people to keep up with it and try and join me along the way.
I envision you as like a Forrest Gump-like character wandering the streets of America with a two iron in hand and just people filling behind you and just following you throughout this entire journey.
He's a Pied Piper.
That's it, man. I'm the Forrest Gump. It was funny. When I did the Ireland book, I was literally became, I mean, people didn't really follow me, but they, it was funny. I was over there and I was writing every week in a newspaper about my trip, an Irish newspaper. And so by the end of the trip, like a few people at the beginning knew who I was, then a few more. And then by the end, like everywhere I went on the road, because I was walking, you know, cars are honking and stopping and you're the wandering American guy. I mean, I was literally like the weirdo. And Ireland's a pretty small country and everyone knows everything that's going on. So I did become that like Forrest Gump character. And that'd be awesome if that happened on this trip. I hope I show up at a couple places and there's like a few dozen people wanting to go out. I think that would just be so incredibly cool. And not because, and it's not about me. I'm not that, I tell them first off, I'm not that interesting. But it's golf, you know, and it's just that we love to do, you know, we love the game and we love to experience it in different ways and in interesting ways. And hopefully, you know, this would be that, being a part of this this odyssey.
When you first came up with the idea and you laid out the scope of the project and everything, did you have one or two places that you haven't been that you said to yourself, I have to play these above all others? And on the flip side of that, do you have one or two, you know, discovered courses that you found in your research and people reaching out to you that you're really, really excited to check out?
There are many, many, many of the latter. There are, but the ones that I knew off the bat, like I haven't been to Sweden's Cove yet. So shocking. I know how like, man, it sounds like the place that could like pay off the whole book, you know, like my search for the Great American Golf Course. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, folks like yourselves at Golf Journal, everybody has been just loving the hell out of it so much. And I know I will too, that it's definitely gotten on, you know, the golf radar, which is great for them and super exciting. So it's not really a hidden gem, you know, but that was one where it's like, of course I'm going. Then just some of the, I've never played National Golf Links and I've never played Cyprus, and they're kind of like dream courses for me to get on. So those would be two. I mean, there are a lot of other dreamy ones that have kind of come into where I have made contacts, but those are two out there that I'm still dreaming of. But it's been cool to like hear from folks and say about these little hidden gems that that say, you know, you've got to come to this. And then I research it and it's like, wow, I really, really got to do this one. I'm just looking at my spreadsheet, for some of the must plays. I guess, let's see, in California, there was one that, Zach Blair was telling me about when I was down at the web.com.
Northwoods, I'm assuming.
Northwoods. Yeah. Yeah. That sounds like one I'm definitely going to. Indian Wells, in the
Palm
desert.
Springs, yeah.
Yeah, that sounds really cool and vintage, and I'm psyched about that one. Man, there's so many. Rustic Canyon, California, I'm psyched about. I hope I get to play Bacon Park in Georgia with Shane Bacon. That's something we're trying to put together.
That's great.
And man, I mean, there's some wacky ones, just like people have built in their backyards and nine holers. There's some on the, you know, there's courses. There's a course on the Canadian border, Aroostook Valley, that sounds really cool. Some of the holes you actually tee off in Canada and play into America, assuming there's no walls by that time. So, and then I'm also going to play some courses right down on the that butt up against the Mexican border. So I'm going, you know, as north, south, east, west. I'm really looking forward to Alaska. I'm going to go up there for the summer solstice and just play through the night. That's going to be cool. And then we're planning to end the whole thing around Christmas in Hawaii. Nice. And with the family. So that, you know, as a, man, I really need something nice to thank my wife for putting up with this trip. So I said, you want to do Christmas in Hawaii? You know, so, that'll be cool too.
Smart.
Well, Alaska would definitely be interesting. We did a whole podcast. I went up to Alaska a couple summers ago, and there is this weird, quirky nine-holer up above Glacier National Park that, you know, people are out there golfing at 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. It's a nine-holer that literally has a rusty Jeep sitting next to the ninth green. It's one of the funkier places I think I've ever been. So I know you'll love it there. It's called Black Diamond.
Oh, that's on the list. Got it.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could talk about this stuff forever. I know Darren could too. I had one question because as I was going through your kind of list of accomplishments and your book, the books that you've written already, the ones that are coming, you got a master's from Notre Dame.
Yeah.
This isn't news to you, by the way, but you got a master's from Notre Dame in fiction writing.
I did.
These books that have really taken hold of your life, not that you haven't written nonfiction. I mean, not that you haven't written fiction, obviously you have. But nonfiction is kind of the core and the strength of what's going on. Everything from, you wrote a book about Bury Me at the Finish Line, I think was the name of it. Is that true?
Yeah, Unfinished. That's a book that someday we'll get out there.
Okay, but, so that was about running the marathon in Paris?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep.
But even from that and a while ago and then through these books on Scotland and Ireland and now America, it's about nonfiction. Does that surprise you given what your focus was in the late 90s?
Funny. It was definitely a transition. I wrote A Gentleman's Game. It was my thesis. It was a novel. I was a fiction writer. I wanted to write novels. And after A Gentleman's Game, spent a couple years trying to write another one. And eventually sort of realized that everything I knew, I was 24, 23 when I wrote that book, and, you know, eventually realized that everything I knew about life was in that book because I was pretty young and I didn't know a hell of a lot more about life. and so this idea of, well, why don't I go out and live something and do something extraordinary that will give me material versus trying to sort of mine my own imagination at that point. So that's where the idea for Paper Tiger came about, you know, to go out and live every golfer's dream, try and play, you know, play golf full time. How good can you get? Can you play at the next level? And I enjoyed it. I mean, I think in doing Paper Tiger, I kind of found a voice for me as a first person narrator in nonfiction, you know, that worked for me and that I could use in other stories, Ireland, Scotland, America. It shows up in a lot of my, you know, Golfers Journal stuff. Mm-hmm. So the transition was, it was definitely, it's been a great one because people read a lot of nonfiction. I'd love to go back and write more novels. The marketplace is generally just, especially if you're writing as a male, you know, I'm generalizing, but as a male author writing for a more male audience, nonfiction would be much more popular than fiction. Mm-hmm. So it's good from that standpoint. And I enjoy it, you know, it gives me, again, it's not just about writing the book. It's about all those other challenges and things I get to do, the golf, the planning, like all this other stuff that goes into it that makes it, you know, an all encompassing sort of obsession. So no, it's been fun. And the fiction background I think is a useful one because, you know, if I don't like how things are going in my nonfiction, you know, I just make stuff up because I was a fiction writer. No, I'm just kidding. I don't do that at all. It's all true. I swear.
I was going to say, you could be pulling our leg in the biggest way ever.
Yeah. These are all novels.
Ever.
Right. So no, it's, but it is useful because I think the tools of all writing and the stuff that I teach my students, writing with detail, how to write good dialogue, description, curiosity, empathy, sensitivity to your surroundings, just sort of noticing your world the way a creative person or an artist does. Those are important things if you're writing fiction, nonfiction, poetry, whatever you're writing. I mean, I think the fundamentals of good creative writing are the same across all genres. And hopefully, coming from that literary background, maybe it gives the work from time to time a whiff of like literary quality. I hope. I'm writing the story as the story presents itself. My audience, I kind of usually imagine as like my dad, who's a golfer and likes to read. Doesn't read a lot of Shakespeare, but loves a good story, and that's who I'm writing for. And that those are frankly books that I want to read too. Yeah. So, but I hope, you know, having that background, maybe if it lends itself to a good sentence every once in a while, that's wonderful.
All right, here's my final question. Darren has a final one for you, but my final is, well, I really had two. A quick one. Are you a celebrity at St. Joe's? Do your students look at you and go, man, this is really cool. Look at what you've done. New York Times bestseller list. You get to go to all these places. You're going to kind of go all around. Do they look at you when you come in, or do they just go, okay, what's today?
I think it's more the latter. I had my first day of classes yesterday. Didn't get that celebrity feeling. I'm not going to lie to you. More of like, all right, would you just give us the syllabus already? No, they're great students. I don't always talk about everything that I do. And some of them know. With my grad students, I try and be helpful using any contacts. They want to be writers too, and I'm always helpful that way. Yeah. I think the only thing that they get out of it is that I have to cancel class a lot. And I think they enjoy that part of my career, that I do a lot of travel, and that Professor Coyne sometimes takes off for a week or two. Now they make up for that time, and they have plenty of work to do while I'm gone, but they're getting their full credit hours, I assure them.
That's
but
cool.
The travel sometimes they don't mind that so much, I don't think.
Darren and I both want to know who's going to play you when they make the Courses series into movies.
Well, it's a long list, starting with Conan O'Brien.
Under the heading of last person, I would have said would be, well, I get, okay, the redhead thing.
You got to get a ginger.
I get that. That's right.
Tall gingers. There's not that many out there.
That's right.
Oh, good. You know what? My wife thinks that guy who's in Billions and
Damian Lewis.
Damian
Lewis. Yeah, Damian Lewis. Someone told me that I look like him, and I don't at all. It was just the total just red hair thing. Like, oh, you redheads look alike. And my wife has like a total crush on him. So I was really excited to tell her that she's married to a Damian Lewis lookalike.
Perfect. And that's who's going to be playing you.
And so there it is. It's decided.
Cool.
That is brilliant. Tom, for my last question, I want to know, what's a great travel tip that you can give us in all your travels? What's something you feel like most golf travelers either overlook or miss altogether in their planning or while they're on the road, just anything in the travel experience?
Gosh, there's so many, right? And it always depends on where you're going. I think people generally overpack just from a logistics point of view, because you go to places and you end up buying like five different golf wardrobes if you go somewhere nice, and then you've got way too much golf stuff. So I've become much of a lighter packer on my trips, because I always grab a couple souvenirs. In terms of like things that people overlook or should do more of, I mean, I'm one for, I play a lot of golf on my trips. And I think sometimes folks, I mean, if you're in good enough health and shape to do it, the idea that 18 a day is enough is kind of silly to me. There's like in the summer, it's light, 12, 14 hours, whatever. That's two or three rounds of golf. So I'm a big proponent of like play more, plan to play more. Maybe if you need to schedule yourself spas or massages to so you can keep doing it. But I golf my brains out, and I feel like sometimes when people plan trips, they don't play enough. In terms of like things to do that aren't golf that people probably miss, I'm probably not the best guy to tell you, because when I travel, I see a lot of country between the golf courses. I meet the people at the golf courses. I get to know them that way. I get invited, hopefully, to have dinner with them and go to their places or local places or even their homes. and I get to know them that way. But it all comes through the golf course. So I would just say, hey, don't be shy. Meet the locals. Say hello. Especially when you're in Ireland and Scotland, people want to know you and they want to meet you. And I think that's really where you get the flavor for places. And really what makes the trips rewarding is the people. So don't be shy.
How cool. Great advice. All right. There's a lot more we could talk about. We're going to get to it in a little while, another episode with Tom. But obviously, thanks for being on the show with us. Great, great stuff. There's a lot of ambassadors out there for the game. I can't think of anybody better than you, Ginger Man, Tom Coyne.
Thank you, guys.
Tom can be found on social media, again, at Coyne Writer, C-O-Y-N-E, Writer, on both Twitter and Instagram. You can get more info, like how to sign up for his classes at St. Joe's, like I'm going to do. You can find that at TomCoyne.com. You'll have to fight me for a spot, I have a feeling, Darren.
Oh, and, you know, like we said, he's going to be on the Emergency 9 to take our golf travel quiz. And since Tom has seen more courses in the UK than probably me, Mitch, and all the listeners combined, I'm sure we'll have some fun and insightful answers in that one as well.
All right, cool. Thanks again, Tom Coyne.
Thanks, Darren. Thanks, Mitch.
Great to have you. And thanks to the listeners. Couldn't do it without you. Hit us up on social media, especially, drumroll, at Golf Trip Experts account on Twitter. You can rate us on iTunes. You can check out the new golftripx.com website. All of that. Spend some time reading. Let us know what you think. We'd love to hear from you. Nobody has really lived out their dreams more than Tom Coyne has. We're grateful for that. We hope you have some big dreams you can run down too. So long.